When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Quick, but let's get into this with some questions today, fellow conspiracy realists. Have you yourself ever witnessed injustice? Have you ever, regrettably, seen the law fumble the ball of what is right and good? And if so, how far would things have to escalate before you decided to take matters into your own hands? These are questions we're tackling today. And perhaps most importantly, at the very top here, I have to establish this episode may not be appropriate for all listeners, as it contains at times graphic descriptions of violence. But here are the facts.
In an earlier episodes, in fact, we've established a long history of drug cartels and gang activity throughout Latin America. And in many cases, these organizations have essentially almost replaced official authorities, become this almost kind of like extra military, extra governmental force, imposing their own sort of lawless rule of law, or at the very least paying off officials to the point of rendering them completely toothless. It's very often very scary place to live if you're not playing ball with these cartels. And this can happen for several reasons: due to corruption, threats, shows of force, you know, making examples out of anyone who dare not play ball with the cartels, and brutal displays of horrific violence. But almost always, it is one or all of these three things.
And we also established that these organizations can function in a lot of different ways, not just some kind of lawless entity, or at least maybe that's a portion of it or a segment of it. The other parts often can provide things that a government cannot or will not. like everything from education and organizational education systems to like positive things for a community, which is it's a very weird thing to wrap your head around, though that is not always the case.
Sure. Yeah. And we see this in other organized criminal enterprises around the world. The mafia has provided disaster assistance before, as has the Yakuza. Of course, you know, you can make a pretty valid argument that in many cases, those positive actions are kind of a PR push. I mean, they help people for sure in the short term, but they also inculcate the criminal element further into the community. It entrenches deeper and deeper, and often there is a profit motive there. You know what I mean? There are always strings attached. Look, it's also, even if something isn't at that level, if it's not quite an organization that's reached, you know, cartel as corporation level, there are certain areas or neighborhoods where the police simply will not go. Now, in the U.S., it's not uncommon for there to be parts of a city or a town where police response is typically going to be less reliable, right? That's a common complaint. But it may surprise people who haven't traveled to different parts of the world that there are some places that pretty much do not have rule of law unless there's a show of force level situation. Like before the Pope visits Brazil, having the militarized police roll through the favelas and just go to town, cleaning the place out. We also see that, to your point, Matt, there are just really dangerous parts of the world. And in many, this is not a ding against the people living there. Actually, most people are really, really nice. But if you travel, what you'll see is that often there are also places where law enforcement seems uninterested in helping you or unable to help protect civilians. And, you know, I'm sure many of us listening have a story about this low level graft, right? Sometimes, you know, it's often been said the police can be their own kind of gang. That'll be interesting for today because I've been in different countries, in Central America specifically, where bribery is not uncommon. And if you make a stink about it, then you're just going to make it worse. Who are you going to, like a police officer ask you for a bribe, right? Who are you going to report them to? The police, right? That doesn't work in every country, newsflash. And if you're someone who can check corrupt law enforcement for stuff like that, then odds are you're already a fairly powerful individual, which means the police in some cases may already work for you. You know, you're just bribing them a different way. So with all this together, we see a mix, a sinister, dangerous mix of this stuff in the Central American nation of El Salvador. If anybody has been to El Salvador, then, you know, one of the first things to say about it before we talk about the story is that it is a physically beautiful place. It's been called the Land of Smiles, and it's been through a lot of terrible things in recent decades.
Yeah, in particular, the civil war that occurred there and lasted for 12 years. It started in 1979, continued till 1992. So not that long ago when a massive civil war occurred there. And, you know, as a civil war, there were a ton of casualties. 75,000, I think it's estimated, people who died during the civil war. That's both combatants and non-combatants. And on top of that 75,000, there's another 8,000 that the UN estimates, that number is an estimate from the UN. They estimate those people just disappeared. So 8,000 people that just vanished, which we can imagine what happened to them.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of, many, many people fled. the insanity. And that plays another big part in the story. We're laying groundwork. These were terrifying days, okay? There's no other way around it. Child soldiers, mass torture, mass murder, sexual assault, you name it. Looking back, estimates landed on some ballpark numbers. So this is a war between a series of groups. The resistance would be probably best known as FMLN, the Ferrobondo Marti National Liberation Front. They apparently committed an estimated 5% of the murders against civilians, and the Salvadoran armed forces and paramilitary death squads were responsible for at least another 85%. The other 10% remains unknown today. That's a sense of perspective. We're not choosing good guys or bad guys here, even though I do think some of the responsibility for these actions lays at the door of the U.S. And it'll also be important to remember this. So this mass exodus, you know, it's not as if, for much of the war, it's not as if a family in El Salvador could just go to Guatemala, an adjacent country, because around the same time, Guatemala is in the midst of a civil war, one that doesn't end until 1996. So many people did whatever necessary to escape the chaos and try to protect their loved ones, and a lot of them ended up in the United States. In Los Angeles in particular, the descendants of some of these families would go on to form street gangs for their own protection, and these would evolve into groups like MS-13. Then there's also 18th Street, sometimes called like Calle 18 or Barrio 18. These groups become bitter rivals. I do want to point out one thing that sometimes gets missed when talking about Mara Salvatruchas or MS-13 is that they started out as just a bunch of kids who liked heavy metal music and getting high together and just smoked weed and hung out. And it, you know, a lot of the things that happened that played a role in the evolution of this group were thrust upon them by the hostile environment of Los Angeles, which has always been pretty brutal to the disadvantaged.
Yeah, well, think about that. You've got this mass exodus from El Salvador. A lot of these people who are showing up are young men who are not allowed to get a job unless you go through this arduous process, and then you can only get a job for a certain amount of time. Maybe they don't have the skills they need to get the jobs that are available. These guys faced, as you said, Ben, the problems that already existed in Los Angeles when it comes to the economy and just the laws that they were subject to now being in the United States.
Yeah, and also this is not a pop reference. They're also the new kids on the block. They're going into areas where there is some existing gang activity, right? And they're going into those areas as the other, right? It's not as if they're, and this is a shame, but it's a reality. It's not as if you as a kid from El Salvador going into a neighborhood that is largely Mexican, it's not as if you are necessarily going to be welcomed with open arms as one of the in-group. You will be seen as coming from afar. And a lot of there are tons of really powerful and really effective nonprofit groups that have fought against the structural weaknesses that help create gangs and have fought to unify society in a more productive way. But this doesn't stop the development of these gangs we're talking about. Throughout the 1990s, MS-13 expands with the help of other prominent gangs, and they do gang stuff, you know? They go gangland. We're talking about protection rackets, extortion, you know, gang crime, right? Like, everybody wants respect. No one's willing to give it. So people end up shooting each other. And you can see some documentaries that are pretty granular about what becomes about the causes behind the great rivalry, which is MS-13 and the 18th Street gang.
I just want to put out there also, they get into things that, you know, are, it's the black markets, right? So since they can't operate legally, the larger groups, once they have capital or money that they've made in some way, or they pool money and they have capital, rather than being able to invest that money or put it into a business or anything like that, they have to just take that money and find a way to make more money out of it. So there's a necessity to resort to the black market sector, which are things like drug trafficking and sex work. And it's just, it's so weird to look at it from that 40,000 foot view and see that it was inevitable that was going to happen, unless there was some kind of program specifically designed or in place when you have a bunch of people coming in like that, to help them almost get started on a pathway.
Right. A transition plan. Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes sense. So one of the key things to remember, and you don't see it when a lot of the current activities of groups like MS-13 are reported. One of the key things to remember is that in the beginning, this was a matter of self-preservation for these people. And then there's another thing that occurs. And there's a lot of history we're throwing at you, but I promise it matters. So the U.S. has cyclical immigration scares, right? And these immigration scares often occur when a politician wants to distract from another problem, or when they need to kind of whip up and foment some discord, give people something to be angry about. It's cynical, but it's true. And as crime is escalating, and as the Clinton administration is looking at the big picture political numbers, they come up with this plan to deport a lot of these folks. If you get caught committing gang activity and, you know, you've got the MS-13 or the 18 tattoos there, then they will just escalate your deportation. So over, it starts in the mid to late 1990s, and then it kind of continues. An estimated 20,000 criminals were deported back to Central American countries between 2000 and 2004. So thousands of people come back. In the case of El Salvador, many of them are returning to a country that has pretty recently survived the horrors of a civil war, right? The same one that their parents fled. And now the infrastructure is trashed in many places. There aren't transition plans. There aren't job opportunities, things like that. So these gang organizations continue what they were doing before. They take the lessons learned and they franchise out, and they find no shortage of kids who are good material to be recruited. MS-13 actually struggles a little bit because Barrio 18, the 18th Street gang, is a little more open about membership. Like, it's okay if you are a different, if you have different racial characteristics, or if you are from a different country, something like that. So they start spreading throughout Central America, and MS-13 is spreading as well, just in a different way. And, you know, of course, El Salvador had a violence problem. It didn't disappear just because a war officially ended. I mean, I know history textbooks kind of paint it like that for a lot of students. Like, you hear about the Emancipation Proclamation when you're in school in the U.S., but you don't read probably about the prison system that came right after. You probably don't read about the people who were who had restricted information access, who didn't learn they were free until, you know, years or decades later. The paperwork is nice and it's important, but it's not the same thing as the reality on the ground.
So for several decades, El Salvador has become and maintains the reputation of being the most violent country in the world that wasn't currently officially at war. In fact, the U.S. State Department reported that El Salvador had the highest rates of homicide up until 2018, and that's in the entire world, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And that's, you know, whenever you hear these kind of numbers whipped out on a global scale, you have to ask for the source. Yeah, the U.S. State Department has some agendas of its own, but also the problems are clear, right? There is not a war. And this is the most violent place where there is not currently a war. The streets become overrun in different areas by violent gangs that are ruling through murder, torture, widespread sexual crime, and more. And when we say ruling this way, you have to understand there are parts of part of our story takes place in San Miguel. There are also parts of San Salvador where people going to work, like to get on the bus, would pass a kid and they would have to give this kid the equivalent of a dollar. Not because the kid was a really great beggar. He was the little tax man. He's the lookout. He's a trainee for 18th Street or MS-13. And if you don't give him that dollar, then the people he works for will come ruin your life. And you also have to pay a protection racket unless you could pay for your own pretty top-notch bodyguards.
Well, think about how horrifying that situation is, because it's not like that kid in that moment decides he's going to kill you for not, you know, paying the money to him. That little kid goes and reports to somebody, oh, you know, here's a list of the people that didn't pay me today, right? Or, you know, that's the guy that didn't pay me, and just pointing someone out, right? I mean, you just imagine, like, this is a child that is basically going to snitch on everybody for not paying, and a gang is like, it may murder you for not paying, or at least beat you up, or may hurt someone close to you to get you to pay. I'm imagining all the instances of mistaken identity in that system where, you know, you're just trusting one, a child essentially, to decide or figure out who's paid and who hasn't.
Right. Honestly, similar to the way authoritarian regimes enlist children to spy on parents. It's messed up. So another group emerges amidst all this chaos, and police and civilians and gangs alike start to recognize some signs. It starts with warnings, graffiti, spray painted places, things like gangs are assholes. And then the graffiti is near scenes of violence unattributed, and people don't recognize the signs yet, just yet. It starts near known gang-run areas. Then the pamphlets come. And then sophisticated, brutal hits targeting gang members. This group, which is anonymous, highly trained, and so far, officially at least, untraceable, had a message for MS-13 and the 18th Street gang alike. La Sombra Negra, the Black Shadow, has returned. We'll pause for a word from our sponsor and return ourselves.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source, and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. La Sombra Negra. In English, the Black Shadow. This group has a history. They have a past. They first get mentioned in 1989, toward the close of the Civil War.
Yeah, if you want to think about this group, imagine maybe ex-soldiers. Maybe that's a good way. They're not all ex-soldiers, but imagine an ex-soldier, okay?
And their identities are not proven. We got to say that.
Yeah, exactly. Just imagine a highly trained individual, right, in the art of war and death. That's an individual member of this group, but they are, when they operate, they don things like balaclavas, you know, maybe some kind of armor, black clothing. They operate with military tactics, whether they're ex-military or not. They perform all kinds of surveillance, intense and sophisticated surveillance on the people that they're going to target. And I don't know, man, I just imagine them as a fully paramilitary group.
Yeah. I mean, they have OPSEC. They also incorporate gang tactics. Mm-hmm. So the people who are conducting operations on behalf of La Sombra they've definitely learned from somewhere, at least in my opinion. This all points to professional training. It's not just a bunch of civilians who got mad and took out, you know, pistols and shotguns and put on stocking caps. No, they're also using assault weapons. They're using stuff that the average resident of El Salvador would probably have a tough time getting, right, in an organized way.
It's almost like they went to a school somewhere, Ben.
Yeah, well, let's see. We'll get to it later. Yes, but yes, that's excellent foreshadowing. So, agreed, paramilitary. They seem to have been taught somewhere, which we'll get to. But second, why call it a death squad? Well, to be honest, it's called a death squad because from the jump, La Sombra has never really been out to just arrest people. And they're not exactly in the parking lot ticket game.
Still, they are always targeting new members. So for some civilians, as we had mentioned at the top of the show, this can be a very complicated proposition. By 1995, Sombra Negra had stated that it killed 17 individuals, all gang members or other criminals. So essentially vigilante action. Which would appear to be unaccountable to anyone but other members of this criminal organization, La Sombra. After a time, the organization took a step back into the shadows and didn't come back out for several years. During that time, they quickly became, as far as anyone could tell, essentially just the top of the food chain, apex predator in the criminal underworld of El Salvador.
Yeah, it was quite a bit of time, wasn't it, Ben, when they were like gone or not active, or they at least weren't putting out their calling card if they were active.
Right. And it's confusing because there were multiple, especially as gang violence escalates, there were multiple death squads. And there were multiple death squads in the time of the Civil War. You will see reports of suspected or proven gang members being targeted by a number of groups, and they may later claim responsibility, or they may, you know, Sombra style, have like graffiti or some other indicator. But it looks like La Sombra Negra itself went away, got into the shadows. But again, because it's a bit of a black box, it is also possible that that group may have splintered, right? They may have gone and done their own things. But anyway, every so often, this thing calling itself La Sombra Negra would reemerge, and authorities were more likely to believe these groups, these murderers or vigilantes, when they claimed to be La Sombra, because La Sombra had signature techniques, which were also have a bit of providence behind them. When possible, they didn't really do super quick hits. Part of it was about sending a message. So if the opportunity was right, they would take their time. Like you said, Matt, they would case. They had pretty good surveillance. They were pretty good at maintaining anonymity, balaclavas, dark windowed, unregistered, unmarked cars, you name it. And when they get their victims, and of course, these gang members have multiple victims of their own, right? Let's remember that. But when they got a hold of their victims, they would blindfold them and they might bind their feet at the ankles. They would always tie either the hands or the thumbs behind the person's back. Here you might ask, why tie the thumbs? If you're on YouTube, I'm doing this. It's like a very lazy Wu-Tang sign. Why tie the thumbs instead of just binding the hands at the wrist? Well, it's a little bit easier to do some stress positions, and look at me panicking. Look at me trying to panic here. Look how my hands splay out. And that's 8 different questions you can ask.
And you can see what they're doing there when they're interrogating somebody that they've caught, right? What do you think they're getting out of that person? Probably information about their next hit, right?
Yeah. Yep. Or it may simply be retaliation because they have proof of something. A scary thing to happen during an interrogation during a torture situation is for the torturer or interrogator to say, just so you know, I don't really care. I don't care what you're going to say. We have the information. The next couple of hours are just for us. Thanks for coming. That kind of stuff does happen. But this does look to be part interrogation, part torture. Yeah, they're gathering more intelligence, which is, again, is kind of a signature move. But this torture, which you must stress, has never been proven in a court of law. It's just evidenced on the bodies that have been found. This includes stuff like the removal of tongue, teeth, fingers, toes, hands, genitalia. And then the final move, the sign-off, one of the sign-off, it's not quite a calling card, because those are the messages they leave, but what the move they're known for that really identifies it to the authorities as La Sombra is something called the Tiros de Gracia, the shots of grace. So after this torture, the victim is shot in the base of a skull, and it's going to be pretty messy because they're using like M16s. Using machine guns, assault rifles. And it's, you know, quite believable at this point without having spoken to anyone who survived that, because none of them did. It's quite believable at that point that it is seen as an act of mercy by the person who's finally getting this horror show ended.
Well, and it's also a way to show like it was us, right? And that's not the only way they show it was us besides the torture and that final shot. They also leave like written messages often on a wall nearby, and they say things from like ranging from just the name La Sombra Negra, something else about the shadow, or often a very specific message about the person that's like derogatory, calling that person, you know, stupid, idiotic, other things like that. What was it? You found a specific one, Ben?
This idiot suffered a slow death. There are a couple of ways to interpret it. Maybe the body, that person was an idiot because they were involved in a gang. By the way, even at some point, if you're a reformed gang member, you still have the tattoos, you're still in trouble, right? But also, idiot could have just meant that they said, look, we'll kill you quickly if you tell us what we need to know. And they said, I'm not telling you anything. And then just made everybody's night a little longer.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely reign of terror. So where are they now? Where have La Sombra gone? Over the decades since the Civil War, they've made a few sporadic appearances, almost seeming to respond to specific gang activities or just to maintain their presence in the minds of their victims, MS 13 and 18th Street. Don't want them to get too comfortable, right? And while many folks assumed that they were working with the National Civil Police or PNC, there still were a few arrests of La Sombra members. And the United States takes this view, saying, quote, in a statement, in July 1995, 16 alleged members of the Sombra Negra were arrested in San Miguel, including four ranking PNC officers in that department. In November 1995, seven were set free, including two of the police officials, by a San Miguel court, which said there was a lack of evidence. In June 1996, six more were cleared of murder charges, including the other two police officials. The remaining three were tried and found innocent of murder in April 1997.
Wow.
So arrested. No one gets convicted eventually, despite this lack of convictions. The National Civil Police, the PNC, say, okay, the Black Shadow has been dismantled. Wink. And also we have to indicate, you know, there's for some locals, the Black Shadow is tremendously popular. It's seen as doing what the police either can't or won't do, which is protect the public. And then, as we said, in the years that follow after this, other anti-gang death squads claim responsibility for various hits. They're not considered the work of La Sombra, but maybe there was a different name or different branding because of things like that court case. At least this is the lay of the land until 2014. It's when everything changed. We are going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and we'll return.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials... cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 2014. There are a couple of gang members together in a suburb, and it's 7 of them. And they're not having a wild gangbanger night. They're not planning to maybe like do a hit. They're not engaged in some sort of trafficking thing. Get this, they got together for a movie night. It's seven gang members who are just at a house, and they decided, yeah, to have some bro time and watch a movie. When some unmarked cars are quietly rolling up, a group of armed men, masked up, dressed in black, armed with M16s, pops into the home and then instantly begins firing. Three escape. The four others are bound, beaten, and executed, ultimately, with that shot of grace at the base of the skull. A few days later, the flyers returned as well. The message was clear. La Sombra was back.
Yeah, and when they put those flyers out, it wasn't like, hey, look what we did. It was a list, or it included a list of other known gang members in the area. Like, it was a message. We're coming for you. Like, that's scary. That's really scary, and it's purposefully that way.
Yeah, in some cases I heard, so this tactic was applied multiple times. In some reports, I had heard there would just be flyers posted that didn't say anything. It's just the list of names. And if you would know that these are gang members, if like you had lived in the community for a long time, or if you yourself were a gang member. But for everybody else, imagine you are walking somewhere, right, in your neighborhood, and you probably wouldn't clock it when you see the first flyer, and it's just a list of like 12 names. But then you see the second one, you know? And then you see a third one, and you stop maybe on the third or fourth one to look, and it's just the same. No explanation, just a list of names, and boom, your name's on that list. That's spooky, right?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the people's names that were on the list were people who had gone to the United States or been in the United States following the Civil War and then were deported back to El Salvador. So it's some of the, you'd think, and I can't confirm this and I couldn't, Ben, looking through it, but it seems to me that those are likely many of the early originators of maybe MS-13, or at least within El Salvador, or at least early influential members.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, I think it's targeting... I think, honestly, it could even go deeper than that, because it appears to imply, not prove, but imply the existence of communication between La Sombra and the officials. Because they, you know, if you are a normal person, a civilian, you're going to have a tough time getting a list of that reads, here are the people getting deported to this country now, they're coming to your town. Also, here are the ones that are specifically in gangs. And here's how we've documented that. It's proven. We've done the work. You don't usually get that. You don't get that info as a civilian. So there are different accounts of people who had kind of reformed, right? But even if you're reformed and you get deported, you still have the tattoos. Right? You are visibly a member of the gang. One guy only escapes because he one of his friends, a local in the community, tells him, like, hey, they know you're here. Who? La Sombra Negra, which is, you know, often reported as the only group MS-13 and 18th Street Fear, and you'll be given something like 48 hours to 5 days to GTFO. And it's pretty clear what happens if you stay, because they're saying they already know your location, right? And there are also cases of people getting popped, getting off the bus, or after the plane lands, like not making it the full, not even making it home. This is real stuff. And now there's, you know, another important tactic there is that they also allegedly, again, not provably, but allegedly took to social media through things like Facebook pages and fairly recently Twitter, allegedly, again.
Yes, massive emphasis on allegedly. We looked through some of those feeds just to see, and who knows? There's no way to tell if it's real or not. Or at least if the person or persons posting are actually in La Sombra Negra.
Right. And then another evolution is occurring here, because just like the criminals they're tracking, La Sombra is spreading across borders from El Salvador and the capital, San Salvador, to Honduras and Guatemala, which are, you know, adjacent bordering countries. So they're bleeding over into the border to find these people. It reminds me of the idea, and this is not a ding on anyone, but it's an observation from the Nolan Batman movies. They say that Batman has no jurisdiction, right? Like if you are military of El Salvador or you are police of El Salvador, then legally a lot of other stuff has to happen for you to get over the border. That's not your jurisdiction. That's a completely different country. But that only counts if you obey the law. So there, and from their perspective, you can see older reports from people who have claimed to anonymously speak for La Sombra. Again, hard to prove. They don't see what they're doing as criminal activity. They think they are doing what they call social cleansing. And for them, it's a problem the law seems unable or unwilling to solve through official channels. We should also point out a ton of people in El Salvador, a very large part of the population, are in some way associated with gangs, such that estimates like 60, 70,000 or whatever, that would mean they outnumber Salvadoran law enforcement pretty significantly.
Oh, yeah. There's reason to fear the gangs as authorities in several of the countries, including Guatemala, Honduras, and surrounding countries that where these gangs operate, not just in El Salvador. But I want to talk about one of the main reasons, Ben, I think that La Sombra Negra formed or at least came back in 2014. And it's because of an issue with the prison system there. The prisons in El Salvador are absolutely filled with gang members, but because there is so much violence between the different gangs, what they've done is separate the gangs into different facilities. So there's an MS-13 facility or facilities, and there's a Barrio 18 set of prisons. And the major issue is that there are so many concentrated members of the same organization in one prison that they can organize, and they can still operate to a certain extent, even though they're all incarcerated. And, you know, you just have to have enough corruption within that system to get messages in and out, or just through regular channels to get messages in and out. It's a real problem. So to my mind, Ben, this is, or at least began as, a group of disgruntled either police officers or military officials who saw that major problem and just thought, well, what, we're just going to imprison more of these guys and they're just going to continue operating? No, we're going to fix it our way.
Right. Like the President Bukele said recently, we're going to stop feeding your people in prison. That's a recent development, but I think it speaks to the historical aspects you're outlining.
You're absolutely right. And not to mention the fact that is that the official who declared war on the gangs, mm-hmm. essentially,
yes.
like open war. Mm-hmm. So then there have been a lot of casualties on the police and military side. You can imagine that every time that occurs, you're fomenting more of a desire to just eliminate gang members rather than incarcerate, right? Or even reform.
And retaliation by police forces is not something that should sound alien to anyone, unfortunately. In a lot of areas of the world, it is far from uncommon. Even if it, like, technically whoosh whoosh didn't happen, it is far from uncommon for colleagues of law enforcement members to visit their own retaliation, right? Instead of waiting for the courts. And you see this depicted in fiction, but that fiction is based on factual events. And again, of course, we're not saying every single member of every single law enforcement organization in the world is doing any of that stuff. Far from it. But I do think that we're asking who La Sombra is. We have to introduce some factors that don't get reported, and they're easy dots to connect. Yes, they try to hide identities. Yes, they're using unmarked vehicles, a mask, and so on. And yeah, for sure, the tactics alone are enough to persuade some people that these individuals are maybe veterans of the Civil War. Maybe they're ex-military. Maybe they're ex or even current police. Several have been taken to court, arrested, then let free. Why does the PNC seem so lenient? How were these tactics learned? These are things that don't get improvised on the fly. And you don't have to be the, you know, like some, you don't have to have attended West Point to recognize when some group is moving with cohesion and training. A lot of the really notorious officers of the El Salvadoran military during the Civil War, they spent time right here in Fort Benning, Georgia, in the home state of the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know podcast, at a school that is now closed down officially called the School of the Americas.
There it is. There it is. Watch our video on YouTube. Just search School of the Americas.
Well, quick and dirty.
I think it's still there. Yeah, I hope it's still
active. Unless it got pulled. Quick and dirty. What is the School of the Americas? Is it like a geography program?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. it's a training grounds. A pretty large area there where it's been alleged in some cases, and it's also been proven in other cases, where guerrilla tactics often are taught to people who end up going and fighting, let's say, in a pre-war. Is that a good way to put it, Ben? They fight a pre-war in a place before the Civil War begins, often in South America or Central America.
Yeah. They're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Wait, they're cuckoo for Cuckoo Puffs, as long as we're describing coups.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
And they're coups that are often supported by the U.S., and the U.S. is supporting the far right side of the political spectrum, at least in Latin America, as far as we've seen historically. So just check out School of Americas. Tell us what you think. And also recall that that Uncle Sam has sent in its own members and allies to deliver other training, right? So the School of Americas, in a very real way, took the show on the road at times. And I don't know, like, okay, so none of this is absolute proof of the identities of La Sombra Negra. None of this is absolute proof of the evolution, right, or the provenance of their training. But if you look at this, it's easy to imagine how a trained keeper of the law might grow disillusioned, like you were saying. They might get tired of the corruption. They might have that Serpico moment where they go to the chief and they say, I've got proof. They did this. We can get them. And the chief is being paid off, so slides it to the left. It's dangerously easy to think that, but with all that in mind, I have to reiterate, we cannot prove this yet, but I think we can say it would be pretty f-ing surprising if this was not the case. Is that fair?
I think it's almost fair, Ben. I think either School of the Americas or a similar training of some sort that's exactly like that and what you're describing, just maybe from a different source. That's all I would say. Because I haven't seen anything with School of the Americas specifically, but it is the thing that does the thing we're talking about.
Right. So we're not saying the School of Americas specifically created La Sombra Negra, right? A lot of
Yes.
The School of Americas accidentally did a lot of stuff.
There you go. It was an unhappy accident.
Oh, geez. Well, this gives us an opportunity to talk about the controversies here, moral dilemmas. Like, you've seen it before in man on the street interviews about a vigilante action, right? There's always going to be people who say, well, good. You know what I mean? Even if there was a guy, I think it was in the United Kingdom, there was a guy who would dress up as a superhero to hide his identity. And all he did was go to cars that had been booted. You know, they put the little boot on the back tire, and he would take a power saw, and cut off the boot, That's all he did. And there were interviews where people were like, this guy's great.
Yeah. It's so interesting to just have the phrase boot in the context of, you said in the United Kingdom, right?
Yes.
Das Boot.
Yeah. Well, I would just imagine the boot of a car, right? Which is the trunk. And I just imagine somebody cutting off the trunks of cars all over the city as an act of good.
Aren't they usually like in the front too? Chaos. Total chaos.
Okay. Well, in the interest of time, folks, I'm going to have to, we're going to have to come back and update maybe later in the week on that real life vigilante thing with the parking guy. I swear it's real. It's not a fever dream. I like barely sleep. So, okay. This does show a dilemma, right? There's a dilemma inherent in any conversation about vigilantes. And the dilemma is ultimately this: do their actions result in more good or more harm? Should they be stopped? Like, if you live in an area where it's terrorized by gangs constantly to the point that they have become your local government, right? And you have to pay protection for your own little shop, which is already struggling because you probably live in a poorer area of town, and you know the police will not and have not done diddly squat for you. Would you still be mad at a group like La Sombra, as brutal as they are? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it would definitely be based on the personal situation and experience, right? If you've got a family member that was killed, there's so many stories of the 2 degrees up to 0 degrees of separation with a family member who was either killed or beaten up by one of these groups because they didn't pay, or they didn't, you know, pay enough or something like that. Ben, there's an article we should shout out from, I think, Crisis Group or something like that, that has a lot of personal experience stories that you can read right now if you want.
Yeah, International Crisis Group has a piece called Life Under Gang Rule in El Salvador, and it's very much worth the read. It came out in November of 2018, November 26th. So you can see the experiences that people are having in this country due to this violence. And, oh, we should also note, you'll see this when you look up the PNC or legitimate police activity in El Salvador. They're already masked up pretty often, pre-COVID, by the
way. Yep. Because they have to hide their identities or risk being hunted down themselves.
Yep. And now we have a little bit of a bigger picture here, but we have to ask, you know, about these dilemmas. The other thing is these victims targeted by the Black Shadow, they're all at some point associated with criminal activity, right? But they have not been given a day in court in many cases. They're not being arrested. They're being targeted, tortured, and executed. The controversy is similar to something in Colombia during the heyday of the drug wars. The group that was known as Los Pepes, for short, persecuted by Pablo Escobar, they operated a low-level war against the Medellin cartel up until Escobar died in, what was that, 93?
Mm-hmm.
When was that? Okay.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating story, right, about a group forming like that and willing, like just willing to go to war with a cartel like that because you were scorned or because you were hurt or you know, damage was done to you or a loved one. But the thing is, you can't find much about that group. At least I couldn't.
Yeah, not a ton in English, but also they were supported by another cartel, which goes to another theory about La Sombra. You know, did someone take over the La Sombra title and use it in a convenient way? Like, are they run by a cartel? From everything that La Sombra has appear to publicly say, I'm thinking the answer is no, and don't particularly want to piss them off.
It's a possibility that one of the other rival gangs, or even an up-and-coming rival gang, is operating as La Sombra Negra to just instill fear or to break up, you know, small parts of, let's say, MS-13's business in certain parts of the country. That's a possibility, though I don't think it's very high in probability.
Yeah. And of course, we're just giving you the publicly available information as it stands. We hope you're being clear about what has been alleged and what has been proven. The government links of Los Pepes were confirmed, right? Even when they were working with cartels. La Sombra may be trying to give its side of the story on social media. You can check out something that alleges to be their Twitter account. I looked at it, and they're reporting on actions of the PNC often, right? And they're thanking people for tips occasionally. But if you go there now, again, El Salvador, very beautiful place. You'll see that it still struggles with gang violence, with violence in general, but primarily gang violence. The current president launched that crackdown that you had mentioned, Matt. This resulted in mass arrests, like a dragnet. That's kind of tough to imagine because it was physical. Tens of thousands of people getting locked up. And this was in response to the murder rate hitting a record high in March of this year. 62 murders were recorded in a single day across the nation. And that's a population of around like 6.5 million. So it's not a huge, huge country. That's a lot of deaths. And the government announced a 30-day state of emergency. They suspended constitutional rights. As we record, that 30-day period has been extended 5 times. And you don't really have a recourse here from March to September of this year, the month we record. Security forces have arrested almost 51,000 people and counting, mostly young men, mostly from poor neighborhoods. And they've arrested them often just for being young men in poor neighborhoods. Starts to feel like a quota system at some point, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's so messed up to imagine it's a reaction to a serious threat of violence. I mean, and, you know, it's tough because what are the right moves to make? Do you spend money you don't have as a country on systems of helping out those in need to prevent people from joining, you know, the organizations that you're trying to fight against? If you don't have the money, how do you get it? You borrow it from another country and then go into a bunch of debt, which may lead to another civil war down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Deal with the IMF or the World Bank or something. Well, yeah. And in the larger picture, too, I am not persuaded that the U.S. has always been a good faith actor. Well, I know it hasn't been a good faith actor, but even now, you know, the reality is, say what it wants, the United States does not really geopolitically have a problem with Latin American states being riddled with corruption and have it, you know, anything to prevent them from becoming regional and then possibly world level hegemons, right? There are reasons Venezuela is a pariah state that are absolutely valid, and there are other reasons that aren't being talked about because it doesn't make the global economic order look particularly cool. And I think whenever we talk about this sort of stuff, we have to realize that that is a piece of the conversation. And maybe that's a story for a different day. Maybe that's a series of episodes on all the work the U.S. has historically put into keeping Latin America divided and trying its best to make them vassal states. I don't know. Yeah, it is a response to a serious threat, though. It's not like an excuse to just, it's not like the president is, who's pretty young, by the way. It's not like the president is just going, here's an excuse I need to do a thing. He is trying to prevent this violence where so many people have often been forced to become members of gangs.
Ben, wasn't there a president who tried a softer hand, like attempted to, at least while they were in office, to do more reforming rather than just jailing and prosecution? Am I wrong?
I believe you're correct. But that the thing with those,
but it wasn't supported, right, by the people. No, like that
not
was
really.
Like,
and the issue with those programs is that they don't provide an immediate solution. They take time, right? It takes time to heal a community, right? And often beneficial actions take longer to implement than destructive or violent actions. That's a reality. And this is why, you know, a lot of people in El Salvador support this crackdown, but a lot of people who are in the neighborhoods they're being cracked down upon are saying this is unfairly targeting the poor. We are barely getting by. How do you think we're going to afford a lawyer? How can we pay $250, a month or whatever to make sure our kid gets food to eat in prison on top of the money we have to pay to go see them, right? On top of the lawyer. Like, where are we going to find this cash? And these people are just being detained often. They're not sentenced. They're just stuck in
jail.
Oh, and
by the way, I still have to pay the taxes to my local gang, as well as the taxes to you and your government.
It's not ideal. I mean, and these are the people, too, that have the least say-so. You know, it's like I was saying at the top of the show, like, if you don't play along with, you know, the gangs, then you're a target. If you do, then you're a target. And it's all just because of where you happen to be born geographically, you know? And then if you try to leave, you're in a quote illegal, you know? It's just, it's a real rock and a hard place.
It is. It is a Gordian knot, right? And some analysts have called it, you know, part of a feedback loop. I mean, the president of a country saying, push me and I'll let your colleagues starve in jail. I'll let them rot. That's pretty extreme. But also,
oh, that's what the other president did. Ben, I'm so sorry. I have to get this out. If I don't want to get it out, I'll be upset with myself. It was former president Mauricio Funes, and that term where he reduced the murder rate down about half, that was 2012 to 2013, right before La Sombra Negra reemerged in 2014. So you can almost see how it could have been, or at least could have been seen as a reaction to those policies of improving conditions for the gang members. It's interesting.
Well, it's important to know that this crackdown approach isn't coming out of nowhere. The government tried other stuff. And at this point, with all these factors mixed in, you can see how people might support a group like La Sombra Negra, you know? Even if it's just implicitly, you can imagine how members of the national police, even if they're not members of La Sombra, you can imagine how they might look kindly upon those actions, because the violence is touching so many people in the country. And at this point, we want to pass the mic to you folks. Thanks for tuning in. Let us know what you think about the situation in El Salvador, or about the moral dilemma of vigilantism in general. I don't even want us to tip the scale by influencing you too much. Just those questions. We cannot wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter, and also on YouTube with the handle Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. If you'd prefer to reach out to us in a more analog way, I guess there's, you know, it's analog, digital, whatever, Brave New World, give us a telephone call.
Yes, you can call 1-833-STD-WYTK. It's a voicemail system. You got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. Call yourself something, not your real name, preferably. And just let us know if we can use your voice and message on the air. Hey, if you don't like either of those things, social media or phones, do you like books? We've got one coming out. Ben, what do you think the most apropos chapter is in our book, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, for this episode?
Assassinations.
But hey, we get it. If you don't want to pre-order or order our book, that's fine. That's okay. You can send us an email. We are
Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.